Welcome to the True Sales Podcast. My name is Adam Cox, and this is a show where I get to speak all things sales with leaders, founders, owners, and directors. I'll be speaking to guests from all over Australia, getting their thoughts on subjects like sales processes, strategies, coping with setbacks, and establishing and maintaining the right mindset.
Hey, Colin.
Adam, how are you going?
I'm very good. How are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, great, thanks. Like everyone else, spinning many plates and trying to act as professional as possible.
I know the feeling. So thanks for joining me on the True Sales Podcast. Before we speak, I always do a brief introduction to the guest. Give us a bit of an introduction to yourself and your background and experience.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I guess that you could say I've had quite a checkered career in sales, you know, starting in Scotland originally. I started in public sector, but then I moved into Oracle, and I guess that was my first entry into the software world, if you will. Yeah. And then having spent quite a lot of time in technical roles, from back office roles to front office in terms of architecture and things, I ended up going to New Zealand. Yeah. And spent 7 years there, and then in various roles as well. And then after 3.5 years in New Zealand, that was my first sales role. And I guess just never really looked back from there, and then moved over to Australia just because there's more opportunity in Australia. And Okay. Yeah, it's been great.
Fantastic. So what took you to New Zealand initially then, from sunny Edinburgh?
Yeah, well, you've used the wrong word there. I think rainy should actually replace sunny. I just wanted a change, Adam. I just wanted to do something that was different and experience something that was different. Interestingly, Lord of the Rings had come out, the movie. And so that was like a big advert, albeit that it was filled with violence. Those were instigators. I just needed a change.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. So you started off in a technical role, and obviously pursued that when you carried on at Oracle. But what drew you into sales? Was it because usually what you tend to find is you're one or the other. And some people that cross over would go into more of a pre-sales type role rather than an out and out sort of sales role, which you've sort of led to in the end. Mm. So what sort of drew you in initially?
Yeah, look, I did start off in the technical pre-sales side. I spent a lot of time there and I really enjoyed it. I've never been a programmer, but I've always been able to articulate, I guess, the value of the technology. And so for me, I guess the crossover started to come when I just started to realize that, and I don't mean this to sound big-headed, but, you know, I was doing the majority of the work and a lot of, you know, deals working with the sales guy who I was accompanying just because, you know, I knew the technology and I was able to also have the commercial conversation. And so after a while, I just thought, I'm just going to give this a go on my own. And that was it.
The difficult part for a salesperson is not understanding the technical aspect of it and having to bring in a technical person to talk through that through. Mm. Do you find that helps you with that sort of the technical background that you've got?
Yeah, look, I think it's probably the most valuable thing I have because it means that I'm much more holistic in my understanding and I kind of know what I'm talking about. I really think that the sort of killer combination for a salesperson is the combination of being like an investigative journalist, you know, just insanely curious and interested, genuinely, caringly interested, and then also combined with an evangelist, you know, someone that can paint a bigger picture and understands how to move the organization forward. And the technical side really helps that.
Yeah, most definitely. So you spent coming at 15 and a half years at Oracle. It must have been a big move for you to decide to move on from there.
It wasn't really, to be honest, Adam. I was ready for it. I just wanted something different. And funnily though, I didn't really know what I wanted. And then the jump for me was to go into MuleSoft, which was complete opposite end of the spectrum in terms of scale and maturity of organization. Yeah. And that was a huge change, you know, totally different mindset. And I couldn't really comprehend even what I joined when I joined. You know, it was a much more collaborative culture where I was, you know, I was a lot more defensive in my way of being, probably too defensive just because I was surviving in this enormous, quite aggressive machine that is Oracle. I mean, I have huge respect for Oracle, but sales tactics are fairly well known in the market.
Yeah, most definitely. And then obviously that time then at MuleSoft, you were still there for a good amount of time. You got a good solid background, and obviously most recently, for the last sort of year, just over a year, you've been at Bright Flag as a director of sales. So even that, from where you've sort of initial sort of technical role and then going into a director of sales, because looking at your sort of background, you've not really had that sort of type of role before. So how did you find that initially when you first joined?
Yeah, I mean, it was very different. Probably the number one thing was just being the first guy in the country with Bright Flag. And I guess there's two elements to it, as there often is. It's often a paradox, but, you know, it's been very exciting because, I mean, the space that we're disrupting is very large. It's cross-industry. It's costly. It's, you know, that traditional relationship with the external law firm from the internal legal department. And so that's a great thing to take aim at. And so that's exciting. But obviously the challenging thing is that most people haven't heard of you. You know, time zones are a challenge. I mean, when Ireland, which is where Bright Flag headquarters is, when they're waking up, we're finishing our day. Yeah. And so, yeah, it just means it's meant putting in a lot of extra time to get it off the ground.
Yeah, of course. So what was your, the first day that you started being the first person in Australia, what did you put in place? What was the procedures, the strategies? What was your initial plan?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, really, the way that I looked at the territory and the market was probably how most salespeople would look at any territory, which is, you know, you just start to break it down into sort of short-term opportunities, mid-term opportunity, and long-term opportunity. And obviously, short-term is, you know, things that can be done now, you know, where there's active conversations, where you can just keep things moving forward. Because I didn't come in completely dry. You know, there was a number of big organizations like Telstra on board. When I came on board. And then sort of in that midterm, it's, you know, how do you find those new conversations? And for me, that was putting in place a series of events. So we had some really good breakfast events, got some customers along to talk to it, and they were very well attended. And then the longer term is, you know, how do you just educate the market and slowly pull people towards you? And that's sort of marketing and, you know, using social channels, etc.
Sure. So, and what was the initial onboarding like for you? Because obviously, from what I can understand, for the sake of the audience, just give a bit of an overview of Bright Flag and what Bright Flag are about and the kind of target market for. Because from what I understand, it's in the law firm and then in-house legal teams that you're targeting of the larger corporate organizations. But do you want to just give a bit of an overview on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, at face value, you know, you mentioned the word legal and people tend to slip into a coma.
Yeah.
But what they're doing is pretty interesting. So if you think of any large corporate, so Telstra, Amazon, you know, pick an organization, they'll have an internal legal department that deal with everything legal, obviously. Yeah. And then what they'll often do is go externally to a law firm like Minters Ellison or Herbert Smith's and have work sort of outsourced, you know, based on requiring specialist skills or whatever. Well, those relationships at the top end of town or even the mid end of town are you know, multi-million dollar relationships. Yeah. And what Bright Flag has done is they've essentially created this platform that's using machine learning to take the invoices that are inbound from those external law firms and actually read the narrative line items on the invoices. So all of those little time increments of sending emails, of having internal communications research that culminates in, you know, what might be a 50 page invoice for $150,000. Bright Flag reads all of that, understands all of it, and then essentially tells you all of the things that you may not want to pay for. So for example, you know, do you want to pay for research costs? Do you want to pay for internal communications? Do you want to pay for, you know, three lawyers turning up to a meeting when perhaps there really should only have been one? And all of those elements have actually been, it's very hard for an organization to find them from, you know, a human doing that work. So we are essentially providing the ability to potentially save money, reduce the amount of time spent reviewing invoices, and then also provide a lot of rich data with which you can report on the performance of your firms.
Wow. Yeah, fantastic. And is there much competition in that regard in terms of the APAC region?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of competition in it. And like most spaces, it divides into sort of the old world and the new world. You know, the old world, there's a lot of established platforms out there that are quite rudimentary in what they do, quite basic, but they do a job. In the new world, there's lots of startups like us. and they tend to be, you know, much smaller and a bit simpler. I guess where we differentiate is that, you know, AI piece of reading the narrative line items. No one, as far as I'm aware, globally is doing it to the level that we're doing it at the moment.
Wow. Okay, that's brilliant. So again, just going back to my initial question before I asked you to go into detail there was, what was your initial onboarding like in terms of getting to grips with that? Because I imagine, obviously, you're coming from a technical background, so you grasping it was probably a lot quicker than I would. But what was your initial sort of learning curve on that?
Yeah, look, it was steep. I mean, as you would appreciate, I'm not a lawyer. I don't have a legal background. Mm. And so I've had to learn this whole vocabulary. And also the structure of, you know, how do legal departments think and what does the hierarchy look like? So it's been quite a steep learning curve. I have to say the guys in Ireland have been fantastic, you know, the amount of support that I've had. So initially I went over to Ireland for 2 weeks and just got fully baptized, excuse the pun, into the environment. And now I'm able to do my own demos and, you know, I can really sort of talk about what it is that we do. But if I need the real specialism, then essentially the company is made of engineers and lawyers and data scientists, so I have a lot of people that can help.
Yeah, okay, fantastic. So how, in terms of business generation then, and how is your day on how you're sort of targeting these sort of prospects?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm it's really in those sort of short, mid and long term approaches. So I'm constantly thinking about, you know, those three different parameters, and that sort of informs what I'm doing. I mean, you know, I've got a pretty clear understanding of who our target market is, and we've done a pretty good job of getting across all of the legal departments really in Australia that are above, for us, it's a sort of $1 to $2 million external spend threshold. So it's really about knowing exactly who your audience is and knowing what they care about. And then, for me, it's being diary driven. So I put blocks of time in the diary to, you know, make calls. I put blocks of time in the diary to work on events and plan events. And just being structured is really important for me.
Yeah, most definitely. And I imagine it's quite difficult in terms of in such a big area that you're covering. How have you managed that? Do you spend a lot of time traveling as well?
It's starting to ramp up. Yeah, so to this point, all of the customers, or the majority of customers, are in Australia. We've got about 10 in Australia now. We've got our first customer in Singapore, and we've got conversations going on in Hong Kong. So, yeah, the travel is starting to ramp up, but we've just really focused on where we think the closest and easiest opportunity is, and that's been in Australia to date. But, yeah, it's starting to spread out now as word spreads.
Yeah, fantastic. And do you have a marketing function that's supporting you with all this as well?
We haven't when I joined. So it's quite remarkable, actually. They got to four customers, I think. And it was, you know, like Telstra, Toll, for example, are a customer, and Newcrest Mining.
Right.
And all of those customers were brought on board from Ireland, which is a pretty remarkable feat, because it's actually hard enough, as you know, being in their office, bringing them on board. So they did a great job before I joined. But now they've hired a rock star marketing team, and they're starting to ramp up what they're doing.
Are you finding that you're getting incoming leads now that they've got that marketing function?
Yeah, it's starting to trickle in. To be quite frank, there's not a lot coming through those channels as yet. And look, it might also be the nature of legal departments. You know, they're not as, I would say, technology prolific as we are. You know, a lot of what they're doing is just sort of email and spreadsheets. A lot of them aren't on LinkedIn. So it's kind of a different audience.
Wow. I think that's quite tough, isn't it? Because everyone, my sort of target market is pretty much everyone is on LinkedIn, whether that's sort of candidate or client base. So that must be difficult. What's the communication like with those? Is it a case of emailing and phone calls is the only sort of method, and then trying to generate sort of a meeting on the back of that, and then meeting them at breakfast meetings and things like that? Is that sort of the format that you follow?
Well, it depends, really. It depends. I mean, the more senior they are, so for example, a general counsel, which you could say is the boss of legal. I mean, you know, if you can even get them on the phone, it's fairly miraculous, and it'll be for, you know, 15 seconds. That's quite challenging. So it really comes about trying to find who can be a champion for you, people that are sort of innovation-minded, modernization-minded, because, you know, there's legions of people that are, I mean, your listeners have probably heard, but I mean, one of the biggest enemies we have in sales is the status quo, you know, people just not being willing to do anything. So it's, how do you find those individuals, regardless of whether they're, you know, let's just say, you know, not as senior or not, but they're just motivated, they care, and they want to make some kind of change.
Yeah, sure. So what's the plan for the business in terms of growth? Are you, do you have someone that's reporting into you at the moment, or is it just yourself that's sort of generating the business?
Yeah, look, so there's three of us in the team now. Yeah. The other two individuals, they don't report to me. They report into Ireland. So we have a head of customer success we brought on board. Yeah. We also have a business development, sort of outbound telephone resource sales person that's been helping as well. And in terms of the plan, I mean, it's very rudimentary startup style. You know, it's acquire as many new customers as possible. I mean, we've got a lot of funding behind us now. You could say that the jet boosters are on, and it's just really about, you know, a land grab and trying to bring on as board as many customers as possible. The thing that they're doing really well is a good job of customer success. So they're very focused on that, I would say, more than a lot of our competition is. So it's, you know, the experience is really important, because obviously you want to keep customers for a long time, even though you're trying to rapidly onboard them.
Yeah, sure. And what's that like from them trying to do that from Ireland with the Australian market? Is that sort of a tough ask, is it? Or what's the kind of response that they're getting from the actual customers?
Well, now that we have someone in country, it's a lot easier. But yeah, to your point, I mean, there's a number of people who are still working very long hours over there to support queries over here, but you know, obviously the team growing here helps that.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's perfect. So what your time then at the moment in terms of new business generation and looking after the 10 accounts that you currently have generated, what how's your time pulled apart now in that regard?
I mean, it's about 80% on new and 20% on existing.
Yeah.
And that's really because the customer success function, it's really there. Bag, if you will, to look after existing customers and help evolve them over time. But obviously I still get involved in things like renewals, etc.
Yeah, okay. And lead generation then, what's your focus there? Is, because I know you mentioned you've got your sort of target, you know, the clients that you need to be chasing, but how are you generating those needs initially?
Yeah, the important thing there is having a really good email outbound generation tool.
Okay.
So we use Yesware. There's a lot of them out there on the market, really good ones. And it's just taking a structured approach to running campaigns. So knowing, you know, exactly the profile of the people that you're targeting, coming up with very articulate, well-written arguments, and having an opinion. An opinion is really important so that, you know, you can engage people. And the interesting question is, you know, do you tailor down to the individual organization and say, you know, we know that in your annual report, you know, you're heading in this direction, your chairman's made these comments, therefore, you know, we have other organizations that we're helping that are like you, and we'd love to, you know, see if there might be a fit in what we're doing with others. That's sort of one approach, but that's very time intensive. So almost the next level up is to target at the industry level and then talk at that level. Because obviously, if you're sending vanilla emails, I mean, we get them all the time. We all ignore them. So therefore, how do you get people's attention?
And I suppose with that, you probably only get a limited amount of chances with these sort of council and sort of head of legal of these corporations, because I suppose if you are sending those emails that haven't got much substance behind them, it's that they're kind of brushed aside, and then it's even harder to get through to them in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, the good thing about those tools is they do show you when emails are being opened. So you can see, and then you can prioritize on the emails that have been opened. And ideally then, even within that, multiple opens. So they're at the top of the follow-up in terms of, you know, then calling people. So we our process is to, you know, outbound email, then call, then email, then call. And then to use the tool as a way to get transparency on where the activity is lighting up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. So how does Yesware, how does that work then? What's the sort of the process behind that? Because I had someone briefly mentioned it to me before as a tool for me to use, but for the sort of benefit of the audience, just talk me through how that sort of works and what the recommendation is on it.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think all of the tools in the space, they probably do a similar thing. I mean, probably the first thing to say is that it integrates directly into email, and then it integrates directly into Salesforce or whatever your CRM is of choice. So in other words, the activity that you're generating and the campaigns that you're creating. So you create a campaign, you define that campaign, what the steps are in that campaign. There's then an email template, you know, for what the email is that's going to go out. You then have to upload all of your contacts, whether it's into Salesforce or Yesware, you can do that. And then the campaign will essentially deliver that email to all of those contacts.
Yeah.
And of course, they feel that it's just personal, you know, coming from your email address, but it's actually coming via this tool. And then one of the nice things, I mean, I use Outlook. I have a bar down the right-hand side, and I can literally see in real time when people are opening the emails.
Oh, wow. It's a clever tool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. And then also that's being recorded into Salesforce so that if you do open an opportunity, you can link it to the campaign that you've created in Yesware so you can track the efficacy of the campaigns.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. It's a really good tool, and I'm sure a lot of people get sort of benefit from that. You mentioned there for the sort of follow up. There's a huge stat that I read an article recently that follow up is the main reason a lot of salespeople are actually losing out on sales, non following up from after the first stage, either meeting or call. Did you have a process in place from your point of view to ensure that nothing's getting missed in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I hear these things mentioned as well, I can't even comprehend what you've just said. That you would have a meeting and then not have a process to follow up.
Yeah.
For me, it's being diary driven. So I'll go and have a meeting, and I mean, I'll follow up within a couple of days with an email on the meeting, and then I'll follow up with a call to see, you know, if we can sort of move forward to the next step, and I find putting things in the diary is just vital. So if there's a moment where I'm talking to a prospect and nothing is happening, then clearly the best thing to do is to put it in the diary in a couple of weeks' time, just to remind you, rather than relying on your memory.
Yeah.
And also being driven by your pipeline, right? So if you've got in Salesforce or whatever your tool is, a whole list of organizations you're working on, to every few days go in and just go through all of those accounts and just say, you know, is there anything else I can do to help them? You know, how can I educate them further? Who can I connect them to? And then nothing really gets missed.
Yeah, sure. So what's the sales process with what you're doing at the moment with Brightflag? Is it quite a lengthy process that you have to follow with these guys?
I mean, it's pretty standard in terms of, you know, having worked across a few different vendors, it's the same sort of deal. The obvious question is, how long does an average deal take with Brightflag? It's about 6 or 7 months.
Okay.
It was actually the same. I mean, some of them have gone a lot faster than that, but it was actually a very similar time frame to MuleSoft, and yet solving very different problems. So that's kind of interesting. I mean, the steps are fairly similar. You know, it's sort of initial conversation, sharing stories, then typically trying to get to a presentation, ideally to a broader group. It's, you know, having a strong point of view. And then it's trying to expand the conversation, you know, and show how it links to their strategy and to how they're driving the business. And then there'll probably be a demo shortly after, you know, ideally to a broader stakeholder group. And it's very focused on them. It's not about the product. It's how you're helping them move forward. And then ideally some kind of executive conversation going on as well. So, you know, you are linked into the leadership, and they might not attend all of the sessions. They might pop in, but it's just making sure that you're always staying, you know, your true north is the organization's strategic objectives. And often where I've made mistakes in the past, it's where we get too bogged down in sort of the lower levels of organizations and we sort of lose sight of the big picture.
Yeah, of course. And are you part of that? So throughout from start to finish, are you the person sort of driving that, or is there anyone sort of from Ireland that's getting involved at some point in the meetings?
No, look, I'm sort of a one-man band here, or have been for a while.
Wow.
I've obviously got some assistance now, but I've actually really enjoyed it. And it's been quite a personal challenge because I've been doing
marketing events, I've been defining the campaigns, I've been doing outbound calling, obviously doing presentations, doing demonstrations, working on contracts. I mean, I have support. I'm constantly asking questions of the team, but certainly in terms of what I've actually been doing, I've been doing all of those things.
Yeah, there's a lot that you have to sort of get involved with there. So how do you, so in terms of keeping motivated, and I'll speak about mindset in a few of the other podcasts that I've recorded, because I think it's obviously huge, and especially from your personal experience, coming from a big company like Oracle, and then going into it's not a startup organization, but going into an organization where you're the sort of running the show, basically in a country that, that had a little bit of exposure, but not too much. How do you sort of maintain that motivation and mindset to and mind frame to keep going? And
pleased that you put that piece in, Adam, because it's, in my opinion, the biggest piece out of all of this, which sounds kind of a strange thing to say when you think of experience as being really important. It is, but mindset is everything. And the reason I say that is, and I don't want to get too esoteric on anyone, but I mean, your whole experience starts with you. Yeah. And, you know, so how you feel about yourself, your energy, your clarity, how you feel about your job, what you do, you know, how you are with others, therefore, it all comes back to how you are in your body at any given moment, which obviously means that you have to look after yourself, which obviously means you have to know what that means. You know, what is it that's good for you? For me, it's yoga. You know, I love the focus and the space that I get from that. And I try to do that, you know, 3 times a week. For me, it's also diet, which is probably another strange thing to say, but I actually eat a very minimum amount of carbohydrates, and I feel so much clearer and lighter from that. And there's actually a lot out there. I would certainly encourage the listeners to have a look at things like the ketogenic diet, which is quite extreme, but, you know, the clarity is just exceptional. And then it's obviously, you know, listening to music and reading books and just creating space and making sure that you have enough time, because it can take a lot out of you.
Yeah, most definitely. And like I say, I'm really sort of being on it. And from my personal point of view, I always find I have a better day if I structure my day to make sure that I'm up at a certain time. So for me, if I get up at 5 o'clock, I'll do 10-minute meditation. I'll exercise for 20 minutes, and then I'll try and make a point of actually going to see the sunrise, which would be literally a 5-minute walk down the road. And I find, and then I'll come back, have a shower, and then read a book and do 30 minutes reading. And I find, and my problem is that I'm not consistent enough with it. I find that when I actually make time to do that, my day is so much more clearer and so much more positive. And even if I have a sort of a bad day, I'm kind of take myself out of it and trying to restore the sort of positive on it rather than actually getting it down. But the problem I have with that is sometimes I work later, so then I'm actually getting up later. Although I'm actually doing the same amount of hours in terms of working, my mindset is completely different, and I'm actually feeling a bit more sluggish when I've actually stayed up later, rising a little bit later. Than I do when I sort of make sure that I've got 7 hours sleep and then waking up to actually with purpose rather than actually just sort of getting out of bed when I kind of feel like it, if you know what I mean. And I think mindset in that regard is huge. And I'm glad you sort of brought that up. But what made you get into yoga though? Because that's something I do meditation, but yoga is something that I've never really, I've heard sort of colleagues and friends that are into it and they swear by it. But what made you sort of go into that initially?
Yeah, I love the physicality of it with the breath. You know, I find I go into a really deep space where there's just no mind, you know, there's just nothing happening. There's just the purity of the movement. And that's, as you know, from doing meditation, that's a rare thing, is to have space, you know, that's inside of me that sort of, you know, allows me to just be aware. And so I really love that. And, you know, having done different styles for, you know, a number of years, there's so many different flavors of it. It's different every day, even though you're actually doing very similar movements. You know, it's always subtly different. And I just find it's a very powerful thing. And I think, you know, the sort of overriding thing, just to your point, you know, Adam, and I think the important thing is not to get too hung up and not to sort of lambast ourselves if we don't stay Gandhi-like, you know, in our, in our approaches. I think the key thing is that word insight and creativity. You know, there's an extra level of creativity and vibrancy and energy comes from having a practice that works for you and sticking to it. It's like we're just more connected to everything that's really meaningful, and the ideas that come from that place are much of a much better quality. So, for example, having podcasts, that's probably an idea that came from that kind of practice. And that's, that's why I swear by it.
That's but really good. I really appreciate you your input there. And what part, from your point of view, in terms of going back to the books that you mentioned that people should be reading, what would you recommend any that that you found that have been insightful for yourself?
Yeah, I sort of chop and change. I mean, I'm reading a lot of Eckhart Tolle at the moment. I don't know if that's something that the listeners will have heard of. He's a German.
No, I haven't heard of him, no.
Right, yeah. He's a German guy. He wrote a book called The Power of Now. That was a number of years ago. And he's sort of evolved on from there. He's written a book called A New Earth, which is, you know, all about being present and essentially, you know, being creative. And and so he has, I've joined Audible. He has a lot of talks. And so I really enjoy listening to his talks. So that's something that I'm doing at the moment.
Oh, fantastic. Brilliant. And then podcasts, so I take it you listen to quite a few podcasts, do you?
I actually don't. No, I haven't really done the podcasting, but now that I've downloaded this app and obviously I want to listen to your other podcasts that you're recording. So I'll definitely do that.
Yeah, most definitely. So, that should be launching in the next week or so. And I'm really enjoying it, if I'm honest with you. I said to one guest that if you would have said to me about probably a year ago, because I listen to podcasts all the time, and usually if I go for a run, I usually put a podcast on and I'm listening. I followed a guy called Gary Vaynerchuk, and he's always on about personal branding and putting together, getting a podcast launched and blogging and just getting yourself out there, basically. And if someone said to me a year ago, I'd be recording video and be doing a podcast, I would have just laughed about the room, because I just felt it was so far away from me as a person, in sort of my personality and how I am as a person. I just wouldn't have done it. And I don't know what it is this year, or sort of the back end of sort of last year, this year. I've just decided, look, I'm just going to go for it. And I put it down as a goal of mine for this year. And to be honest, I said to my wife, I wish I did it a lot earlier, because I've really enjoyed speaking to you guys and getting a real good insight into what you've gone through and how you've sort of built the business and the processes you follow, the strategies you put in play. Even for me personally, I'm getting a lot out of it. Whereas my point is to get the value for salespeople who are going through sort of a similar thing or thinking of. I find podcasts is brilliant. And like I said, I've always listened to them, but never thought of doing it myself.
Yeah, it's really good, isn't it? And it's funny when we undertake these projects, if you will, that come from quite a genuine place. You know, they actually surprise us when they appear, that when we do it, we get things out of it that we didn't expect, you know.
Yeah, exactly that.
I think that's a really beautiful thing. And obviously what it links into for me is that, you know, this is a time of education. You know, good education is selling, because there's a care to it and there's a thoughtfulness to it that education has in it. And I think that's the difference between, you know, really great salespeople and people that are maybe finding times really tough because they're maybe too focused on themselves.
I completely agree with that. Yeah, definitely. So just from the final question I want to ask, in terms of if you were to speak to someone, and I know your situation is quite different because you've come from a technical background and kind of progressed naturally into sales. But for someone that's thinking of getting into sales or a grad that's looking at getting into a career of sales, what would sort of advice would you give them if you was to give them anything?
Yeah, look, there's probably two things I would say from my experience. I think the first thing is knowing, firstly, how you're wired. You know what you're good at and know what you struggle with. So then the more you can understand yourself, the more that you will be able to focus around, you know, on the things that you're good at and really leverage those strengths rather than, you know, focusing on the things that you're perhaps not so good at. You know, so have strategies around how you do that. But knowing how you're wired is a really important thing. And then also knowing, you know, what drives you. You know, a lot of the sort of cliche opinion is that salespeople are driven by money. But, you know, I learned many years ago that I wasn't, and I actually struggled with it for some time. Even bosses used to ask me, you know, I don't know how you're wired. And then one day the light bulb came on, and the light bulb was that for me, it's about forming meaningful relationships. It's about people. And when I got that, I had a much clearer purpose, and that it was okay not to be focused on, you know, a flashy car, which is fine as well. There's nothing wrong with that. But for me, I just had to sort of come to terms with that. And then, so that would be one. And then the second thing is, you know, pick a really good problem to solve. So sales is fantastic, but, you know, what's really important is that, and this is my opinion, that, and this is for software really, but, you know, pick something that's cross industry, pick something that's a big money problem that has big money flowing through it, pick a problem that companies need to solve. It's not a nice to have. And then obviously find a company that has a great culture and a great differentiated product. So for example, MuleSoft, they're in the integration space, integrations across industry, big money flowing through it because digital transformation, you know, bright flag, cross industry, legal, big money flowing through it with external legal departments, and that modernization needs to change. And then it comes down to the product and doing your diligence on that. If you sort of apply that lens to companies, then I think you probably won't go wrong. And then it just kind of comes down to the three T's, which is, you know, territory, timing, and talent. You know, you need to be there at the right time. You have to have a good territory, and you have to be talented. You have to work on yourself and be the best you can.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's fantastic points. I really appreciate it. It's even I take some from that as well, which is great. But I really appreciate it. I appreciate you spending time on the True Sales Podcast, Colin. It's been perfect and a pleasure to speak with you. Where can people reach you if they were wanting to reach out? What channels are best for you?
LinkedIn's probably the easiest. I'd welcome any connection requests or, you know, quick coffees here and there. I'm the network's everything, so I'd love to meet anyone that this resonated with.
Yeah, most definitely. And like I say, I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and it's great to hear your story. And I want to wish you all the best with business. It sounds like it's going in the right direction.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. I appreciate the opportunity, and all the best to everyone listening and to what you're doing. I think it's great.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks, Colin. You have a